Radiolab is supported by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, I'm Jad Abumrad. This is Radiolab. Today, 8 experiments in translation.
Lesson number 3. They called it shell shock. Duvargi gurpatash descarg shell shock. Now you try.
In this one, Robert Krowich and our producer, Soren Wheeler, talked to writer Adam Gopnik about George Carlin.
And why is George Carlin mentioned?
Oh, because Carlin is the wonderful sort of folk philosopher of language.
You're talking about the comedian George Carlin?
The comedian, yeah.
Now this next thing is about the English language. It's about little expressions we use, we all say, and the little sayings and expressions that we use all the time.
Most it was one of his great subjects.
We never really seemed to examine these expressions.
And all the more interesting because he didn't even have a high school education, you know, so it was not something that he got from schooling.
And one of Gopnik's favorite Carlin riffs, and I really like this one too, is about how Carlin
hated euphemism.
I don't like words that hide the truth. I don't like words that conceal reality. I don't like euphemisms. And American English is loaded with euphemisms because Americans have a lot of trouble dealing with reality.
And Carlin was wonderful about things like that, about bullshit, as he called it.
And we have no more old people in this country. No more old people. We shipped them all away, and we brought in these senior citizens. Isn't that a typical...
And he was unsympathetic. The reason we use euphemism, I've just been through, my father-in-law died 4 months ago. And we went through those same horrible business that we all go through in a intensive care ward where the doctors and nurse practitioners have a language that they've been taught. We just want your father to be comfortable. He's gravely ill. He's gravely ill means he's dying, right? And we want him to be comfortable means can we give him enough drugs so that he'll pass out before he dies and so on. And so it's certainly true that euphemism can be a repellent thing, but no one is fooled. What we're mocking is the absurdity of the effort to disguise something that you cannot disguise.
But Carlin's real point was that it like dulls our reactions to it, that it actually has like a kind of a negative effect.
And it gets worse with every generation.
And he has this whole bit, it's about shell shock becoming PTSD.
No, he goes, it's in 4 different things.
In the First World War, that condition was called shell shock.
They used to call it shell shock.
Simple, honest, direct language. 2 syllables. Shell shock.
And then it became...
battle fatigue.
Battle fatigue.
4 syllables now. Takes a little longer to say. Doesn't seem to hurt as much.
And then after it became battle fatigue, then it became...
operational exhaustion. Hey, we're up to 8 syllables now.
Then it became post-traumatic shock disorder.
Still 8 syllables, but we've added a hyphen.
And then it became PTSD.
Post-traumatic stress disorder. The pain is completely buried under jargon.
This was the Orwell notion that you could erase sensitivities if you blanded out the word. So if you stop saying, oh yeah, we just tortured the guy, if you say some phrase.
Force of interrogation or enhanced interrogation.
That makes a big difference. And part of what Carlin is saying is that like now that it's PTSD, we are not having the appropriate reaction to it. I mean, it's shell shock.
I'll bet you if we'd have still been calling it shell shock, some of those Vietnam veterans might have gotten the attention they needed at the time. I'll bet you that.
But now you're putting your finger on this is where the rubber meets the road. Does the use of euphemism, does that really rob us of some understanding?
And Adam Gopnik, surprisingly, says maybe not.
The truth is just the opposite. We actually have more of an apparatus to help people with PTSD than they did in 1915 to help guys with shell shock. The reason the word gets more abstract is exactly because you have a much more complicated and abstract system of support. It's not because...
Do you think that's the reason it's called PTSD? Is because it's a more complex and...
Yes, because think about what that evolution says. The initial thing was, oh, these guys are being driven crazy because the shells are exploding all around them on the Western Front.
Gopnik says the thinking was, you know, it was temporary. The shell goes off, it explodes in a moment. They have a moment of shock and they need a moment of rest and then they can go back in. But by World War II, we were thinking, that's not quite right.
It's not just shells exploding, right? It's the whole experience of battle.
It's all the shooting and the death and the fear.
So it becomes battle fatigue. You're trying to generalize it. You're trying to make it richer as a concept.
But it also becomes fatigue versus shock. There's less violence in that.
Right, because you're looking at guys who may not exhibit the symptoms of shock necessarily, but who've, over time, it becomes impossible for them to go on. There's a wonderful film from World War II called Let There Be Light.
These are the casualties of the spirit, the troubled in mind, men who are damaged emotionally.
About guys with what they were then calling battle fatigue. And the reason they were calling it that was because you didn't necessarily see it right away.
Then around Vietnam, he says, we realized you don't just see this on the battlefield. You see it with guys who aren't necessarily directly involved in battle.
Right.
And so the question became,
what's the source of it? It's, you say, well, it's nervous exhaustion. You say the human nervous system can only take it for so long, and then everybody's nervous system shuts down.
Hence the term, operational exhaustion.
Now that's example, again, when you're trying to enrich it, you're saying the guys aren't cowards, they're not in a state of shock, they're behaving the way all human beings do. And then you get more concerned about them and you say, the real problem isn't they're just their experience on the battlefield, the problem is that they're in a constant state of disorder because it lingers on long after you think it's over. You can't just get these guys into a hospital for 6 months and think they're going to be better. They are permanently, they have post-traumatic shock. And then once you have a whole apparatus to deal with it, then you becomes PTSD. My point is just that it's perfectly possible that the language of euphemism grows and becomes more abstract as people actually are becoming more empathetic to the people who suffer from it.
Soren, do you buy? I mean, he's basically turned Carlin on his head, and he's made these blander words enrichments.
I mean, my only move would be to hit play on Carlin.
Poor people used to live in slums. Now the economically disadvantaged occupy substandard housing in the inner cities. And they're broke. They're broke. They don't have a negative cash flow position. They're f***ing broke. Because a lot of them were fired. You know, fired, management wanted to curtail redundancies in the human resources area.
Sono un ragazzo Yankee Doodle, Yankee Doodle fa l'omoia, un vero nipote del zio Sam, nato il 4 di luglio, ce l'ho una ragazza Yankee Doodle, è la mia gioia Yankee Doodle. Yankee Doodle va a Londra solo per cavalcare. Sono il ragazzo Yankee Doodle.